Carla, would you please call the roll?
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman?
Here.
Novick?
Here.
Hales?
Here. Welcome to the Thursday, March 7th session in the Portland City Council. I believe we have one item on the council calendar, and Carla, would you please read the item?
Item 203, authorized changes to the city code to require protected sick time for employees of businesses working in the city of Portland and enter into a contract with Oregon State Bureau of Labor and Industries for enforcement.
Thank you. Since our last council session on this item, Commissioner Saltzman and Commissioner Fritz have been working together on a task force to further develop the proposal, consider potential amendments, and the results of that work and quite a bit more is in front of us today. So I'd like to call on first Commissioner Fritz to talk us through that task force process, what you found, what you've done, and when, therefore what's in front of the council today.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, everybody, for being here today. My Chief of Staff, Tom Bazo, is going to come up and walk us through the amendments. It's been a fascinating 6 weeks, and I very much appreciate all the input, whether supportive, opposing. There's been a tremendous amount of discussion since the first hearing on January 31st. So Commissioner Saltzman and I convened a task force of seven members generally supportive, seven members generally with concerns, and worked through pretty much line by line the entire code and have a new proposal that was out on Friday. And we've continued to make improvements even up to about 10 minutes ago. So we're going to walk you through those different issues. Where's Tom New? And a lot of this, of course, many of you have been very engaged and you're aware of what's now on the table. We wanted to make sure that everybody watching at home who maybe doesn't have access to the internet or to all of the documents is aware of what the significant changes are.
Thank you. Tom Bazo, staff for Commissioner Fritz. I've got a little PowerPoint here. I'm going to go over a little bit of the premise for this ordinance again, and then go right into the amendments. The amendments that I'll cover will be the highlighted amendments. A lot of the other amendments are structural and have been changing and moving portions of the code into various other sections to make it more applicable or to make it more clear. I won't be covering a lot of those sort of structural and Scrivener changes. So essentially going over again, the reason for this ordinance is to establish minimum public health standards in the workplace. Working while sick is a public health issue. And working while sick affects individual and collective productivity. We had so many discussions about, you know, the issues related to whether or not it was an economic issue or a health issue. It helped us to always reframe this back into the public health issue. And then, of course, the spread of disease throughout our schools and our community. It was definitely one of the primary motivating factors for this ordinance, which is a parent shouldn't have to make a choice between going to work and staying home with a child. And a child, also when they go to school sick, they spread their diseases to other kids throughout the community. So we have to be, it's another public health type of issue. So I'll go straight into the amendments. In the definition section, we made some changes to a lot of the definitions, but these were the most significant ones, and those related to employee. And we also deleted the definition for hiring hall because it was too complicated to actually get a definition that worked. In terms of employee, we clarified it per the state statute. And we also clarify the exemptions of what an employee actually is not. Also clarified PTO, which is an important part of this ordinance, which is the paid time off policies that a lot of businesses have. So I'll go into accrual of sick time. This is the first section after definitions. And these, what you see in the bolded black lettering is the additions. So these were some of those that we added in here to clarify some of the commission and piece rate type of issues. I think that this is going to be talked about more with by council in a substitute that's being offered, so I won't go into that much. Employees who are paid base wage plus piece rate tips or commission shall accrue sick leave based on base wage. It's essentially just saying that if you have a base rate and you're getting a minimum wage, then you basically are you're accruing sick leave and using sick leave according to that base wage. Employees who travel to the city and make a stop as a purpose of conducting the work. This was a topic of conversation by the task force. And we just added one word here to basically clarify it and make it a little more clear as to what that meant. And essentially, it really is about work. It's not about stopping to get gas or stopping to basically get some food. It's about moving from outside the city into the city and working, traveling from outside of the city and into this inside the city and working in a regular way. Continue on with the accrual of sick time section. Another change was an employer is not required to allow an employee to carry over accrued hours in excess of 40 hours. We essentially already had this in our original, but we clarified it more here. So the maximum that you could earn is 40 hours in a year, and you cannot carry over more than 40 hours unless, of course, the employer allows you to do that. You see the white text, that's the text that was already there. I put it in here just as context. Sick time will begin to accrue for employees who are employed on the date this ordinance takes effect. We already had that. We also wanted to put in there for new employees that when they commence their employment, they begin to accrue the sick time. So use of sick time. We had discussions about how you would actually measure it. Would you measure it in a quarter hour, or would you measure it in 4 hours? It seemed to make sense by most in the discussion that 1 hour was a standard increment that we use often, unless a lesser time could be, you know, proffered by the employer. Also, when you take the sick time, you could take it once you came into a shift and you found out that you were sick or you were getting sick during the course of that shift, then your sick time could cover that portion that you weren't there. Just wanted to clarify that. Also, of course, it could cover a whole shift if you called in prior to that shift occurring. Then we also wanted to clarify when you could not use sick time. And this really got into the discussion of shifts. And this talks about how if you're not scheduled for work on a shift at the time that you're sick, then that sick leave is not something you can use. Especially an example is a part-time employee who basically works 20 hours a week, but then on the other 20 hours of that week, they get sick at that time period. They cannot take their sick time at that point in time. They can only take it when they were scheduled for work. Also, another addition was adding in that during the first 90 calendar days of employment, you would not be able to use your sick time. You still would be accruing it, however. So that goes back to that point about you start accruing from the day one, from the day that the ordinance is in effect and the day that you commence your employment, but you can't take it until the 90th day. This was kind of a discussion about a probationary period that exists in a lot of different areas of employment. There's also still the 240-hour provision in the ordinance, which basically says you can't take it until you've actually accrued 240 hours. That's still there, and it could overlap this. It could go beyond this, or it could be less than this, but the 90 days would still hold true so that if you'd already accumulated your 240 hours
of work,
that you would then still have to wait until the 90th day before you could take any sick leave. So we clarified a little bit more on shift taking, that it would be possible for an employee to work an alternate shift to make up for the use of sick time. It's an employee-employer relationship thing and how they communicate on that issue. But it's not something that you are required to do. You are not required to work an alternate shift, and you're also not required to find a replacement, which we had in our original. We discussed more about written policies or standards, and we just clarified some of that language there. We took out of our definitions what we call designated contact protocol, and then we basically put it into this standard in this section of the ordinance of the code, and just made sure that it was understood as being a reasonable and accessible means of communication identified by the employer, and that would have to be a written policy. Also, the employee has their responsibility to make sure that they follow that. Use of sick time for absence of more than 3 consecutive days. We added in there a documentation section related to domestic violence, harassment, and sexual assault or stalking, as it's provided for in the qualifying absences that are allowed for the use of sick time. And this documentation is tied directly to an ORS, so we wanted to make sure that that was pointed out. And then another section was put in terms of exercise of rights protected and retaliation prohibited. It would be a violation for the employer's absence control policy to count earned sick leave covered under this chapter as an absence that may lead to or result in an adverse employment action. So there still are sections in this exercise of rights protected that basically allow the employer to deal with abuse of sick leave. This one was simply to point out that sick leave cannot be used as a means of saying that you are being docked for your pay or anything like that in relationship to the sick leave, taking the sick leave in the way that it is qualified in the ordinance. Notice and posting, pretty much what this is about is providing for written notice and notice upon commencement of employment. So we basically were wanting to make sure that there was that written notice that occurred. It still would have to happen in English and other languages that are needed for that particular company or business. It's just another means of communication. And then also a provision for the employer that basically fines shall not be assessed if it's found that they did in good faith try to make sure that that communication took place. Employee records, we just added the words accrued and used to make sure it's clear that that is what this is about, is being able to track your time according to what's accrued and to what is used. Enforcement, we added in a provision for possible mediation. And the certification of compliance, which was about whether or not a company could actually become certified, I will leave that as a discussion point for the council after my presentation. So that concludes my presentation. Are there any questions?
Questions for Tom?
Thank you. So I'm going to run through a number of additional small amendments that I put in, and then some of my colleagues have additional amendments. And so Tom had mentioned that we clarified that if you're taking sick time in accordance with this policy, that up to the limits used in this policy, you cannot be subject to an adverse employment action. We also added under retaliatory personnel action the statement that adverse employment actions based on sick leave that is not covered in this chapter are not retaliatory personnel actions. So basically anything above the provisions in this could be used by the employer. And that was suggested by the North Northeast Business Association representatives. We clarified what would happen for accrued use of sick time if the business is purchased by another employer, and the employer if the employee continues to work within the city at with the new employer, then their sick time carries over. That was just a clarification that came out of the task force. And I think those are my amendments. And then Commissioner Saltzman has one to offer.
There are actually two amendments, but thank you, Commissioner Fritz. And I'd like to first thank all of the task force members who participated with Commissioner Fritz and myself to continue to improve the sick leave policy. The meetings were extremely important and helped to make a much better product. And although Commissioner Fritz incorporated many of the changes identified in the task force meetings, in her most recent draft, there were two issues I felt could continue to add both clarity and certainty to the business community. And I'll hand those out to my colleagues. And somewhere on one of those tables is some 50 copies of the amendments. Many Portland employers are already offering sick leave or paid time off, PTO, that equals or exceeds the requirements of the proposed city sick leave policy. Those employers have expressed concern that the new tracking requirements of the city's proposed ordinance will be unduly burdensome and very costly. One solution to that problem was identified as a method in which businesses could certify that they offer benefits which equal or exceed the benefits in the ordinance. The concept of certification leaves many unanswered questions as to how certification would be implemented and the costs associated with certification, both to employees and, or I should say, employers and the city. The intent of the following amendments is to acknowledge that many employers provide greater sick leave benefits than required by the city's ordinance, and to clarify that they are not required to keep records in a different manner than they are already keeping them. For instance, if an employer offers more sick leave than the city's ordinance calls for, they will not have to track the hours that an employee is working in Portland as opposed to another site in Hillsboro, let's say. Employers must offer benefits that equal or exceed the benefits required by the city ordinance. In addition, they will still have to keep records of the hours worked and sick time accrued and used by employees, cannot retaliate against employees for taking sick time, and can be fully investigated and held liable if they are found to violate the city's ordinance. So these proposed amendments are modeled on a similar concept, which is in Senate Bill 801, which is the bill that is currently introduced in the Oregon legislature to provide paid sick leave on a statewide basis. So I don't think I need to read the language, but I think that this is the intent, is to comply with what's both proposed at the state level and to ensure that employers who are meeting or exceeding the city standards are not burdened with excessive record keeping and paperwork. So I move those amendments.
Thank you for the additional clarity, and I accept them as friendly amendments. Is there any discussion on those?
No, I appreciate Dan bringing forward the amendments. They are consistent with the discussions we've been having about specifically addressing employers that provide an equivalent or improved benefit, and they are designed to reduce some of the regulatory red tape on folks that are already complying. And I think it's the fact that it's consistent with Senate Bill 801, which I understand has been introduced by Senator Rosenbaum, I think tells us that it's faithful to the overall framework of what we're trying to do, and have my support.
So just so people can track what we're doing here, then those amendments have been accepted as a friendly amendment. There's no dissent to that, and therefore we have a single document that we're going to continue to talk about. And now I think Commissioner Novick is going to talk about additional amendments.
So if I could just add one point. I would ask that the written copies, which contain my rationale, be made officially part of the record too.
Yes, I received them.
Okay, thanks.
We won't have, just for the public to understand, we won't have multiple documents in front of the council. We'll have one amended draft that we'll then have a hearing on.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The additional amendments that Commissioner Fish and I want to introduce are under 9.01.030, accrual of sick time. Under subsection A, we propose deleting the phrase excluding employees who are paid by piece rate or commission with no base wage. Also under B, we propose deleting the language excluding employees who are paid by piece rate or commission with no base wage. And finally, under item D, We propose eliminating item D entirely. The employees who are paid by a piece rate or commission only with overdose wage do not accrue sick time. We propose deleting that. And finally, there was kind of a sort of a mindographical error, we concluded, with Commissioner Fritz's assent in item C, which did say employees who are paid base wage plus piece rate, tips, or commission shall accrue sick leave based on the base wage. But actually, what should say is shall be paid sick leave based on the base wage. So instead of accrue sick time, be paid sick leave.
Did you have anything to add, Commissioner?
Commissioner Fritz, I just want to make sure that we're following the essentially the script here. Is striking of section 9.01.10 certification of compliance, is that also being brought as a friendly amendment, or was that in your substitute?
It's in the substitute. It was my understanding that Commissioner Saltzman's amendment was to substitute for that rather than in addition to it.
Yes.
So we're
that's our understanding too. So that
folks, you are seeing democracy in action here, and I'm really excited about everyone on the council engaging, including everyone in the community, to make this better. So again, I accept the Fish-Novick amendments as friendly amendments. And with that, I will move the substitute, which has all of the changes that I just talked about and that all of us just talked to, and that's what would be the new Exhibit A in one place for your comments today and for our vote next week.
Second.
Okay. Moved and seconded. And now we'll call up, I think, Anna Kamen.
If we vote on this, on accepting
to put the substitute before us. Anna, is that okay in terms of what you need to talk about?
Yes.
Okay. So we'll take a roll call on the substitution of the amended substitute for the original ordinance in order to put that before the council.
Fritz? And I apologize, everybody. I'm sure that was complete gobbledygook to everybody. It will be posted on the website tonight, and we'll be voting on it next week. So if it turns out we've made errors that you want us to correct further, I would be happy to make sure that we continue working on this, and indeed we will. Aye.
Fish.
I want to thank Commissioner Fritz for the way she brought the council together around these amendments. Thank Dan and Amanda for the hearings that they led, and all my colleagues for the discussions on these amendments. I believe the package of amendments we're voting on strengthened the proposal by streamlining certain provisions and also policing against certain abuses, particularly any effort to get around coverage by using a non-traditional compensation system. So I appreciate the discussions and also the feedback we've received from the public on this. Aye.
Saltzman?
Well, I'm going to support this. I just wanted to clarify that I omitted some description of my second amendment, which is to deal with employers that pay their PTO in a bank of hours at the beginning of a calendar year and the associated record keeping. It's in the amendment. I just didn't offer an explanation for it.
Okay, well,
and that's why. So I just want to clarify that. And please to vote aye.
Novick.
I want to echo what my colleagues have said and also particularly to thank all of our staffs for their very hard work on this ordinance. And I vote aye.
Hales.
I want to thank Commissioners Fritz and Saltzman for taking on the latest stage of work and in bringing in diverse viewpoints into the process of developing the proposed ordinance. You're going to see this again, frankly, in our budget process, where we have created some council subcommittees where a couple of members of the council will take on a set of issues, bring in some resource people, and then bring in, hopefully in every case, a better proposal in front of the city council as a whole. It's part of how we make this strange, unique, wonderful form of government that we have here in Portland work. So I want to thank you both for the extra effort and for the folks in the community that you brought into this process. Aye. Okay. Now I think we call on our HR director, Anna Kanwit. I'm going to have more Amandas around here if I'm not careful. Thank you, Anna.
Thank you, Mayor, Commissioners. Anna Kanwit, Director of the Bureau of Human Resources. I just have some very brief comments on the ordinance. The city, as an employer, is really model in terms of the leave that we grant employees in terms of sick leave and the protections that we provide for use of that sick leave. With that, I want to state that my comments are based on the assumption that this ordinance, as applied to city employees who currently earn sick leave of 104 hours a year, full-time, prorated for part-time, that the provisions of the ordinance apply to those first 40 hours. To verify, that makes it consistent with many of our agreements and much easier for the city than to actually apply the ordinance to our existing sick leave rules. One comment would be, for example, one of the examples in terms of why this is important for the first 40 hours. We do have employees in the city that actually accrue and are able to use sick leave prior to being employed for 90 days. Our assumption is where we allow it as 30 days, that would still be consistent with the ordinance. Second, we in the city there under section 9.01040, use of sick time that concerns shift trades. In the city, we do have a few bargaining units that are allowed to trade shifts. And via council policy, our employees are required to designate leave as family medical leave or Oregon family medical leave when the reason for taking such leave fits into that. The idea is both to protect the leave and ensure compliance with federal and state laws. Shift trading can be, depending on where it's happening, off the books, where you don't necessarily know employees are trading shifts. Legally, also, an employee doesn't have to return the shift trade. So they could have another employee work for them, but they do not actually have to return the favor and work for that employee. So again, just want to confirm that for the city contracts where we allow shift trades, that shift trading in lieu of using sick leave would only apply to the first 40 hours of sick leave. So, and the other issue under 9.01040 section L, this concerns the, I think, discipline and investigation of employees. And I apologize, I'm not sure if the amendments actually address this or not. They may have, so I might be being somewhat redundant. But in my reading of the ordinance, the policy, that an employer can investigate and discipline for sick leave that constitutes a pattern of abuse. We do have instances in the city where we investigate sick leave for things that wouldn't be a pattern necessarily. Okay, you changed that? Okay, thank you.
All right, just to clarify, it now says employers suspecting sick leave abuse, including patterns of abuse.
Mm-hmm. Excellent, thank you.
Thank you for your feedback on that.
Yeah, appreciate that, thank you. And then in terms of section 9.01050, the exercise of the rights provided, again, this applies to the first 40 hours. The city doesn't want to be in a position, obviously, of being contrary to our own ordinance in terms of the enforcement. That's all the remarks I have concerning city employees who are already covered by sick leave. As you know, we do have a number of employees who are seasonal, seasonal casual employees who are not eligible right now for sick leave. And just point out as we roll this out to those city employees, there obviously is a cost associated with that, particularly for the Parks Bureau. We're estimating about $200,000 right now. The second issue I would point out, we do have seasonal employees who return within 6 months, so they would be rolling that's earned but unused sick leave over when they return to their next season of employment. Last comment I'd like to make on the current city employees who do not receive paid leave right now, and that would be our returning retirees. As you know, we have a provision that allows employees for a limited period of time who retire under PERS through us to return to employment. Often it's to provide knowledge transfer. It's sometimes a short-term workload needs. Right now, those employees do not accrue any form of paid sick leave or paid vacation. The policy Behind that is they have their vacation time has been paid out by the city that was not used. Their unused sick time that they accrued from the city has actually been, in many cases, added into their retirement benefits. They've received the benefit from that already. So I would encourage you, as we're looking at the implementation of this, that that category, it's very unique in the city, be excluded from the policy. Those are all my comments. Thank you.
It exists at other public employers, too, I assume.
Well, other public employers would certainly have the same issue of, you know, by law, if there's a time that's accrued, would have to be paid out. And the sick leave for at least Tier 1 and Tier 2 PERS retirees, there's a formula that includes that into their retirement benefits.
Right. No, I mean that they might also be bringing people back for 1,029 hours a year as part-time employee or something else after they retire.
Yes, absolutely. It's up to 1,039. And, of course, the economic benefit can be you're not contributing PERS on those hours.
Yeah. Okay. Questions for Anna? Great.
Thank you so much.
Want me to call up your panels?
Yes.
So we have a couple of invited panels. So we're going to invite the first of those up and then another, and then we'll open it up for public testimony for all who are interested. The first panel, the folks we have, I think, coming are Andrea Peluso, Tony Fuentes, Serena Cruz Walsh, and Jeff Anderson, or Ben Meyer. Welcome.
Just so that everybody knows, that folks on these panels were part of our task force, so they put in a lot of time and effort, and thank you very much to everybody who participated.
Hi, I'm going to start, and I apologize right after I speak. I got to go to the airport, so thank you for indulging me. My name is Tony Fuentes. I'm here representing my business, Milagros Boutique, as well as the Voice Business Alliance. Milagros is a local baby boutique. We've been in business for 9 years. We currently have 7 employees, and all of our staff, part-time and full-time, hourly and salary, received earned time off. And that's pretty much been our policy since we opened up. Voice represents more than 200 local businesses and professionals. They're all dedicated to the triple bottom line of profit, planet, and people. Margins and mission are both important to Voice. I'm here basically to thank you for your leadership on this issue and welcome your support for the substitute amended final ordinance that just happened. Your leadership is critical to ensuring that our workers and workplaces are healthy and that public health is effectively protected in our community. This year's flu season underscores the need to provide people with the opportunity to stay home and heal and not be out in public because they have no other choice. Your leadership is also critical to ensure that the 80% of Portlanders who do not receive a single minute of protected sick leave are protected. There's no reason why the working poor should also be the working well sick poor. Any leadership is needed to ensure that a basic standard in support of healthy workers and healthy workplaces has an opportunity to spread to the entire state of Oregon. I think as we heard in the first hearing of the first version of this ordinance from our legislative team, that action from Portland is needed to help move the state forward. Sometimes leadership does have to come from the grassroots level. The business community is divided on this, but the public is not. The public firmly supports this. And as a business that provides this benefit, I can tell you this is not a business killer. It is not a job killer. It is not any kind of rhetorical monster. It's no surprise to me that when San Francisco passed earned sick leave in 2007, that the Golden Gate Restaurant Association was adamantly opposed. And it's also no surprise to me, as an employer who has this benefit and has seen the benefits of it as an employer, that later the Restaurant Association admitted that the nightmare fantasies they had about organized sick outs and people taking off, calling in sick to go to the Giants game did not materialize. And in fact, that their executive director posited to Business Week that earned sick time is the best public policy for the least cost. As Portland moves forward, this least cost proposal should support all workers and workplaces. Too much is lost and too little is gained from carving out special exemptions for workplaces and workers. On that note, I also want to thank Commissioner Fritz as well as Commissioner Saltzman for their leadership in facilitating the task force that reviewed the initial version of the ordinance. And I thank all the task force members who volunteered their time, energy, and expertise over the past month. You have a better ordinance because of it, and what needs to be codified to ensure an effective workplace standard is there. But I know also that the work is not done. I'm not done. They're not done. None of us are done. ever. instead, we're committed to also ensuring that the administrative rules are developed in a way that makes sure that the city's ordinance is effective and efficient in its mission of supporting Portland's workers and workplaces. In closing, as someone who has worked on this issue on both the state and federal level, I wish we could wait for leadership to trickle down from above, but we can't and we shouldn't. Instead, we need to lead the way right here in the city of Portland. And your action is needed right now to help support the people of our community today. And I thank you very much for your leadership and your time.
Thank you.
Andrea? Hello.
Have a good trip.
Mayor Hales and members of the City Council, my name is Andrea Peluso. I represent Family Forward Oregon and the Family Forward Education Fund. I wanted to start today actually by talking about the laws recommended by the Factory Investigating Committee of New York after the tragic Triangle Waste Company fire in 1911 in New York City. 146 workers, mostly teenage girls, perished after the fire broke out on the 8th and 9th floors of the building. Many were locked in with no way to escape. Among others, the recommended and enacted laws required that factories install automatic sprinklers, keep factory doors unlocked during work hours, install fire escapes, give employees access to toilets and clean drinking water, reduce workloads for women to no more than 54 hours a week, and ban children under 18 from work that could injure their health and well-being. The Triangle Factory laws established health and safety standards to protect workers and became standards across the country, as passage of earned sick time ordinance in Portland would do today. Those laws, passed about 100 years ago, were met with similar opposition from some members of the business community as earned sick time and with many of the same arguments. In 1914, the Real Estate Owners Association of New York adopted a resolution that said, "We are of the opinion that if the present recommendations are insisted upon, factories will be driven from the city, labor will be compelled to accompany them, factories, tenements, and small houses will become tenantless, with the final result of demoralization in tax collections by the city." In 1913, a representative from the New York Flower Club said, "We would consider it a grave injustice to ourselves as well as to the bakers and the public at large if the bakers in our city were unfairly discriminated against in their struggle for existence, either by conditions such as they could not reasonably hope to contend against, or by making it possible for bakers of other localities to determine their business here in their home market by more favorable terms." The arguments against needed labor and workplace standards are always the same. Costs will rise, benefits will be cut, businesses will flee the city or the state, the government is overreaching, it harms small businesses or new businesses, too much bureaucracy, and the list goes on and on. These arguments were made around factory safety standards, child labor laws, the establishment of the minimum wage, and during every major debate about working conditions that this country has ever seen. Despite this, the market continues to operate, many businesses continue to flourish, and employers continue to adapt to new standards in remarkably efficient ways. As Martin Luther King Jr. once said, "The arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice." This has been true in the fight for civil rights and for the fight for labor rights. There will always be those who push back against change, as there will always be those who embrace it, who work toward justice. The ordinance before you today is not only about employers' bottom lines, though it doesn't discount the importance of those either. It is about multiple bottom lines, those of workers struggling to make ends meet and those of employers who are working to do the right thing in a free market that discourages it. It is about the community's bottom line with disease spreads and healthcare costs increase. It is also about public health and social justice and equity. The process that got us here today has been a long and inclusive one. We began conversations about this issue with community members and the City Council over a year ago. Over the past year, we have had tens of thousands of conversations with citizens, business owners, affected workers, advocates, parents, teachers, and many others. We have engaged in multiple tables and policy discussions, forums, and town halls. I was glad to participate in the recent task force reviewing this concept that was established by and led by Commissioners Fritz and Saltzman. Thank you. And while I have to admit that I was suspicious in the beginning about how that task force would improve the product before you today, I have to admit that it did. Commissioners Fritz and Saltzman led the process with great skill, and the product before you today is better for it. Thank you. The suggestions offered by employers during this process helped to make the language clearer and the definitions more intentional. I would have preferred to see all workers covered with paid sick time and to have a shorter waiting period before accrued time could be used, but I understand why these compromises were made. 90 days does signify a season. I think setting a threshold around what a season is important. And I'm happy with the amendments offered today, as I had significant concerns about the certificate of compliance that have now been resolved. I'm also happy to submit for your review, it's being passed around, a cost-benefit analysis conducted by the Institute for Women's Policy Research that looks at this specific Portland policy and estimates that, based on utilization of sick time estimated through use of the National Health Interview Survey, adding the sick time required by this act will increase employer costs by 19 cents per hour for employees receiving new leave, which constitutes $6.90 per week. However, these costs will be offset by 24 cent per hour or $9 per week reduction in costs related to the current loss of productivity and increased spread of disease that results from presenteeism for an overall net savings. Additionally, this report estimates nearly $18 million in community savings that we can anticipate from the reduced spread of disease, reduced urgent care and emergency room visits, and nursing home stays. That report is public today and available for review. I thank you for your ongoing and thorough consideration of this ordinance, and I urge you to pass this ordinance, this version of this ordinance, next week. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Andrea. And could you send me this electronically, and I'll post it on the website?
Absolutely.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales, commissioners. I'm Serena Cruz Walsh, a co-owner of Albina Construction. We're a small construction company in Northeast Portland. We're so small that your ordinance excludes us. We have 4 employees, but we do have a paid time off policy. And I'm really excited about what you have in front of you today. I want to particularly acknowledge Commissioner Fritz and Commissioner Saltzman and your leadership in the task force and organizing it. And thank you for honoring me with a spot there. I was very pleased to participate. I didn't quite know how it was going to go, but I have to say it was an extraordinary part of process. I've seen a few public processes in my time, and I thought it worked really, really well, and the leadership that you two brought to it made all of the difference, and the work of your staff and of the collective staffs on council really made a huge difference in how this could proceed. I think the amendments that have been offered post are all very thoughtful and collaborative. It's really, as a former elected and as a public member and as a business owner, a very exciting process, I think, to both been a part of and to watch happen in this community. I want to especially acknowledge Andrea and Family Forward and the coalition that they've brought together to bring this issue to the public. I think that it is a critical one, and I look forward when you all pass what the beautiful piece document you have in front of you. I look forward to fewer sick days, both by our own employees, by my child in her kindergarten classroom. Well, next year she'll be in first grade, and by my own fewer absences from being sick. There, I think this measure has the potential to add productivity in this community as well as health, and that's a unique opportunity. And I know that there are costs associated with it, and I think for some folks it seems like they are huge. But I just have to say, when you take a look as an employer at what you are already paying and the laws that you are already subject to as an employer, this really is a marginal increase in costs and very well worth the increase in productivity and the increase in overall health for your company and also for those with whom you work. So I very much appreciate, again, being a part of the process, and thank you for your leadership and moving this forward today. Thank you.
There you go.
I'd like to thank the whole council, the mayor, for considering all this, specifically Fritz and Commissioner Saltzman for including us, for including all the folks that were in the task force, and for including me in that. I was excited to get to
put your name into the record.
Oh, sorry. My name is Ben Meyer, and I'm here. Pardon me. That's I'm here representing Grain and Gristle Restaurant. We employ 29 folks outside of the owners in Northeast Portland, and I mainly want to commend you for not only considering this code and this issue and the policy that you guys are putting forth for the employees of the city, but also for including us in the discussion on developing this code. I was involved in this for about a year, loosely on the outside. It's been a guiding principle of our company since its inception 3 years ago to be able to provide these benefits for our employees, and it was partially because of the process of introducing and developing this code that we were able to develop and implement the code within our company for our employees as is. I felt that the task force was extremely beneficial, not only to enlighten those of us who are involved on the issues that were affecting industries outside of our own, but also for us to get the chance to voice the specific issues that this code would possibly introduce for us within our industry and in our own companies. And I felt that the amendments to the code that came through were extremely beneficial. And I'd again like to thank you for including us on this.
Thank you. Questions for any of our panelists? Thank you. Thanks for serving. All right. Our next panel, I think, is Bernie Bottomley, Joe Gilliam, Bill Perry, or possibly one more in addition to the three of you.
Karen Stewart.
Karen is here. Karen Stewart. Yes. Please come on up. Welcome. Oh, you can stay there. That's fine. And did your two colleagues? I thought I saw them. Well, we'll let you get started, and perhaps staff can see if they're out in the hall. Oh, here they come. Oh. Dramatic entrance.
Sorry.
It's all right.
Fire away, Bernie. You were first.
Oh, I'm first. I'm sorry. Mr. Mayor, members of council, Bernie Bottomley, representing the Portland Business Alliance. I want to start out by sharing our thanks for Commissioner Fritz and Saltzman chairing and staffing the task force. It was a good dialogue. We had a lot of give and take in that meeting. Appreciate the work that's come out of it. Appreciate the work that all of you have done. And I know the staff have been very busy over the last couple of days trying to integrate all of the various input and feedback and make it all work together. So very much appreciate that. Appreciated being invited to participate in that process. That being said, we still have significant concerns about the ordinance and about the process. I think the activity around that task force really showed that a more inclusive and more deliberative process does generate better product. Legislation is always sausage making, but when you rush, odd things can get into the meat. And we'd like to see this process go slower and be more inclusive. The task force did a good job, but I'm still talking to folks in the community who are just now coming to grips with the fact that this is moving forward and have had just not enough time to really absorb all of the nuances and issues involved with it. So we have concern about the process. We have concern about the city's role in whether this is truly an appropriate role for the city to be in employer-employee relations. When an elected and a political body substitutes its judgment for what's good for the economy, for the business community's judgment and the employees' judgment, it's a very slippery slope, and it can result in attempts to have a one-size-fits-all approach, which doesn't fit a lot of people. And I think you'll hear more about that. You have heard more about that in the last couple of days. We're particularly concerned about the impact on small businesses. Half of small businesses fail within the first couple of years of existence, primarily because they can't make ends meet. It's not because they decide they just don't want to do it. It's primarily because they don't have enough income and to pay for their expenses. And this adds an additional expense, both in terms of the expense for employee benefits, but a significant expense in terms of having to keep track of the records and making sure that you're in compliance. We also have concerns about the impact on businesses that already provide equal to or greater than benefits or substantially equal to or greater than benefits. We've had quite a dialogue about that over the last couple of days, and I appreciate the effort to try to address that issue. And I think the language that's been suggested, I don't want to say it's better, it's less bad, is how I would characterize it. But we think for that 60% of the businesses that offer a benefit, that there should be a clear, unequivocal option of certifying that they have met the requirements of the city and that the rest of the ordinance doesn't apply to them, and that I think gives would provide significant value to that and would change the dynamic, I think, the psychological dynamic, where employers would be actively interested in and supportive of maintaining that compliance rather than being in the position of being subjected to the ordinance and feeling like it's a negative instead of a positive. I have four or five suggestions that I think still ought to be looked at. One is that idea of certifying or somehow exempting companies that already offer the benefit, particularly from the private right of action issue. I mean, really, there isn't a groundswell of concern about companies that offer paid sick leave shorting their employees that rises to the level where we need to create another private right of action, another opportunity for businesses and employees to go to court with each other and waste a lot of money. A lot of our members are lawyers, but, you know, waste a lot of money on lawyers. It just doesn't make sense. And I don't think that that's a productive piece of the code. I think recognizing collective bargaining agreements that are currently in place is significant and important. There's 75 years worth of history on establishing the ground rules for collective bargaining agreements, and this essentially says we don't care. We're going to open your collective bargaining agreements for you and tip the balance that was set in those negotiations. And it's extremely expensive for companies that have I think we need to recognize that a lot of companies have collective bargaining agreements that apply to employees that are not entirely within the city limits, and they will have to open those agreements and change the benefits not only for inside but outside of the city. And there are a lot of, frankly, collective bargaining agreements where paid sick time was offered, has been in place in the past, and the employees have bargained it away because they like other things more. And so I think this narrows the range of options that are available not just to employers but to employees as well. I want to echo support for an issue that was raised by the building trades unions around the unique circumstances of hiring halls. We think that those agreements are longstanding and benefit the employers and the employees. They've negotiated them. They both like the system that they have, and we would like to see them recognized in the code. Fourth, there's in the economic impact statement for this ordinance, there's very little money in there for education of employees, employers. And the burden is entirely on the employers to understand and implement this ordinance. It's not productive for the very first time for an employer to understand the circumstances that they're in to be when Boley files a suit against them or when a private lawyer files a suit against them. That is not productive. And so we would like to see the city undertake and adopt some responsibility for the implementation of this ordinance rather than just farming it out to Boley and sort of washing its hands of it by finding the resources to do education on this so that businesses have an opportunity to understand what their responsibilities are. And then finally, we'd like to see some kind of horizon in the ordinance or in the resolution. A year from now or 2 years from now, the city does its own economic analysis, looks at what the impact of this has been, and revisits the ordinance to see whether it has had negative impact on businesses, particularly small businesses, and have the opportunity to make adjustments at that time. So appreciate you listening. Appreciate the process. We oppose the ordinance, but we appreciate the and believe that the amended ordinance is less bad than the original.
Please.
And Bernie, thank you for your testimony, and thanks for the way you've approached this issue and the conversations that you've had with members of the council. And I understand that you have substantive objections and you've stated them in a principled way. I guess the one thing I just wanted to clarify was this issue about whether we should have had a certification provision and an opt-out from all the applicable regulations. And I understand the argument that it would be for some employers easier to swallow if there weren't these administrative remedies built in and these other bells and whistles. I guess the one thing I would say about that is, having practiced employment law for most of my life, almost every important workplace protection has with it in existing law a provision that says no retaliation or a right of action of some kind. And those aren't placed there because there's an inherent suspicion that employers won't do the right thing. They're placed there because there are, from time to time, employers who don't do the right things, and we provide a remedy, and that remedy ends up policing the whole marketplace. And I would, I respect you, I respect the position that you've taken, but I personally don't share the view that providing a remedy and a no retaliation, no discrimination clause is intended to be an indictment of employers generally. I view it as just consistent with how virtually every important workplace protection has been crafted, and it gives someone in the case of having their rights violated a chance to seek a recourse. And the converse of that is that the more I thought about this issue of whether the city should be in the business of certifying and then certifying and exempting, I actually thought that created the kind of red tape that we often get criticized for the business community for taking on, both in terms of something outside of our core expertise to be certifying a lot of things and doing the paperwork, which would also include having additional staff, people, and a process, but also somewhat cumbersome. So my own personal view was I'd rather have the existing legal mechanisms like EBOLI be available to employees in those rare instances where their rights are violated to have that right. And I want to assure you that I got no whiff of this side that these protections were built in because of a wholesale lack of confidence in the employer's ability to understand the law and enforce it. But I appreciate your point of view.
No, I appreciate that, Commissioner. And I think the concern that we have is that right now BOLI is already behind on its investigations. And there's not really, at least in the way that it's been structured and communicated to us, there's really not funding in this to give BOLI the resources to do investigations. And the experience that we've heard from employment folks on our side is that when BOLI doesn't have the resources to actually look at the situation, what they typically do is issue a letter of, that allows the party to go and sue. And so it immediately goes into a legal framework, which is costly for both sides. The notion of a city function was that there you wouldn't end up in that situation where BOLI is under-resourced to actually do the work and takes a shortcut.
Let me just say, just in response to that, I think it is the hope of many of us that the state takes this issue up and creates a framework statewide. And that partially solves, I think, the question you've raised. But I think it's perfectly reasonable for you to propose that in the event our approach goes into law next year, that we take a look on an annual basis of the enforcement actions triggered by this and to address that question and to see whether both employees and employers are getting timely resolution of those disputes and, frankly, preferably at an administrative level so they don't all generate litigation. So I appreciate that comment. Thank you.
Next.
Yep. For the record, Bill Perry with the Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association, and I participated in the task force too, and I appreciate the opportunity because I do think that I want to commend the certain things like I came up here in the original ordinance and was asking for changes to the shift trading, and I do think the shift trading language that is here, like I said, we'll have to see, but to me it seems like it's better than San Francisco's and Seattle, so I want to commend and say I appreciate that. I do want to say express, I do think January 1 is going to be an expensive day for employers for many different reasons, not just this. So, I mean, it's just a very unique date that is going to be expensive, and it's kind of ironic that this gets added on at that particular time with health care, minimum wage, and all the other things coming due. So I just think it's going to be hard to hold employment. We'll all see how that is. So I just wanted to state that for the record. As we look at the ordinance, I guess I'd like to bring up a couple of things. I do appreciate Commissioner Saltzman's recommendations, but on G, on page 3, where I think Commissioner Saltzman added some language. I do want to say in the second line under the first under the ordinance that was amended, and Saltzman's amendments, in the second line it says calendar years. And I guess I'm wondering why that doesn't just say carry over to the next calendar year.